America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Outside your window still may not be great right now, but here on Post Show Recaps, everything is Superman 2. It's Superman 2 here on Post Show Recaps. It's the second week of our Christopher Reeve Superman coverage on Post Show Recaps. I'm Josh Wigler, and I'm joined here by a man who would sell all of us down the river for Australia, Kevin Mahadeo. Kevin, how's it going?
Listen, I have an affinity to beachfront property, so Australia is all beachfront.
Australia!
Yeah.
And not for nothing, too, Kevin, that line, Australia, came about, I think, roughly one scene after Christopher Reeve says, I have to go back!
Oh, no! God!
Anyway.
The second one has a Lost reference!
I didn't mean to, unless it's time travel. I mean, they were filming in the late 70s, right? So it's roughly
this
around the time
80,
of the.
I think.
Well, yeah, it came out 80. Been, yeah.
Yeah, it came out 80. The filming is a very good question for this because there is a lot of backstory here about the filming of this movie. So, yes, the filming is definitely late 70s and happened twice, basically.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. Yeah, there's definitely production stuff we want to talk about here for sure. I watched the theatrical Superman 2, which is credited to director Richard Lester. Kevin watched that as well, in addition to the infamous Donner cut, which is restoring Richard Donner's original vision for Superman 2. I did not see that. I know, Kevin, you're going to have a lot of notes from watching both versions of the two.
You teased
for me coming onto the podcast that there is for sure a superior version of the two, so that's exciting. I'd love to talk about that, but we'll get into all that as we are on week two of a four-week Superman odyssey to fill in the gap between now and the start of Loki on Disney Plus. Coming your way June 9th, our Loki recap will be coming your way the Fridays after those Wednesday drops. So we're getting close. We've got a lot of Superman to keep us company in the meanwhile, even in other occasional superheroic jaunts in the form of the Post Show Recaps patron feed. Last week, as promised, we had our recap of the first season of Amazon's Invincible. If you have watched that show and you want to hear Kevin and I talk about it, that podcast is indeed available for you in the Post Show Recaps patron feed at that $5 level, patreon.com/postshowrecaps. It's patreon.com/postshowrecaps. You get that Invincible recap. You also get Kevin Mahadeo talking about Mighty Ducks Game Changers.
Quack, 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 quack.
With Melissa each and every week. So definitely tune in. patreon.com/postshowrecaps. You are supporting your favorite podcast, because I assume this is it. How could it not be? This is the one. It's got to be.
Yeah. Thanks for us being your favorite. I'm sorry if I am your favorite. That's a bit rough. I apologize
it's
for whatever
right.
life you might
Don't
be leading
apologize.
That led to that.
Don't apologize for anything, Kevin. Everything is Superman. All right. Before we get into some Superman, I want to take a quick second to thank our sponsors for this episode of Everything is Super. Those are our friends over at Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know it's easy. Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to Geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit Geico.com today. That's Geico.com. Kevin Mahadeo, here we are. It's our second week of Superman. It's Superman 2. It is the movie where most people kneel before Superman 2.
Yes.
kneel before me, Superman, son of Jor-El!
You will kneel before
You'll
me!
You'll kneel before me, son
it's
of Jor-El!
Great. Like, this one's interesting, right? Because this is the one that everyone has said, like, this is the best one of the quadrilogy. This is the one, as a kid, I definitely loved as my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
It was really interesting revisiting it. I had only seen the Donner Cut maybe once or twice before, and I'd seen the Richard Lester version, oh, Jesus Christ, too many times.
Yeah.
I believe you were watching it on the Discord at one point. You said I'm 29 minutes in, and I was just like, so what, that's on the moon?
Yeah, you
And you
knew.
Were just like...
Yeah, we were talking. I was like, Kevin, I'm a half hour in. I think I'm like 26 minutes in. You're like, oh, so you're on the moon. I was like, how did you know that?
You were right. I'd seen it a lot of times, and so it was interesting revisiting, because I do think, having watched the first one, having watched the second one immediately, ultimately, they're both very good. I love these movies, but I think watching it, I do think, from the Lester version, the first one is better.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, cool. I feel so much better. I'm so glad that you said that, because I watched Superman 2. The Richard Lester.
There's two Richards.
Tale of two Richards. Yeah. Oh my God, Kevin went there. I was like, oh no. Is this like another Spider-Man 2 scenario? And indeed, where did his powers go? And so it's like, oh gosh, am I going
to... At least there was an explanation here, Josh.
Yeah, but very thin. And also, he gets them back after... You won't be able to get them back unless you have the crystal. In which case, not only can you get them back, but you can actually trap yourself in the chamber. And everyone else gets hit with the power. So like, I was like, oh no. I'm definitely enjoying it because Christopher Reeve is incredible, and he's just so good. And Terrence Stamp is iconic as General Zod, and Gene Hackman is killing me. The Australia just destroyed me. And Margot Kidder, are you kidding me? Is so good as Lois Lane. But it was like very clearly the inferior of the two movies to me. Like, what are you guys doing? Where's Marlon Brando? Why did you completely cut him out? Like, there's some choices that I felt like I could smell decisions.
Here we go.
And so, like,
I think
I don't know.
I felt
like, oh no, am I going to come on to the Superman 2 podcast and be like, I like the first one better definitively, and then Kevin's going to be like, you've got no taste, you're a terrible person, you should be blasted out into the sun via the Phantom Zone, and I'm breathing a little easier knowing that, like, I'm not just going to get ripped to shreds, but I expect what you'll say is that the Richard Donner Superman 2 is the superior of all three of these films.
That is basically my thesis.
Okay.
I think having watched the Donner version as well, wow. That is
you'll have to explain to me,
great,
like, how it is meaningfully different, because it's so
hard.
And I do think, like,
so
we got to
meaningfully different.
We got to chart some of the production stuff.
Yes.
Can you set that up? Because I don't think I fully understand it.
Yeah, and that's probably a good place to start before we go into the movie, which will probably help us guide us through a discussion and talk about the differences more directly. But you called out one of the most notable things. And so here's how this all went down. Richard Donner came on to Superman 1. They had the producers, the Salkins, who Richard Donner was going to do two Superman movies back to back. And so he was filming a lot of Superman 2 while he was doing Superman 1. There was a bunch of scenes, a bunch of stuff that was done with the actors, because he had both stuff kind of planned out, him and Mario Puzo, the writer. So they had this giant epic they were going to tell, and he was constantly butting heads with the producers, who wanted the movie to be a little more goofy, a little more fun, because, again, they, I guess, had this idea of what comics should be, and it's, I guess, closer to Batman 66 than Superman 78 that we got.
This is one of those moments where I'm realizing that Mario Puzo of the Godfather fame wrote the Superman movies.
Yeah, I believe that is correct, right? Like,
that's correct.
Yes.
Cool.
I didn't get that wrong.
Because
I was saying
helps
it,
explain
I was like,
the Marlon Brando stuff, and it's just like, oh, okay. All right. I'm getting it now. All right, cool.
So they were butting heads constantly, and this is where in one when we had our discussion on the
Superman,
first podcast.
I told you.
I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse, Superman.
I'm
going to
make you an offer you can't refuse, Superman.
You're going to become human, but...
You're going to become human. You got to sacrifice it all, Superman.
I like that you were bringing the lisp in slowly. Yeah. Like, start off with no lisp. Yeah. As it went on, you hit the lisp.
You got to sacrifice everything, Superman.
But this butting of heads is where we also see that, like, they start to use pieces because they weren't sure they're going to get a two. So the reversing of time that I mentioned that happened at the end of the first movie that none of us liked is actually supposed to be in the second movie. So Donner eventually gets fired from the director's job.
And at what point? And by at what point, I mean, like, how much had he already done?
80% yeah. of Superman 2. 80% was done.
And he had done, like, all of the first Superman 2.
Correct. Yeah. The first Superman.
The first Superman as well.
As well.
Got it.
There you go. So, here's the thing, though. In order to get a full director's credit, the Directors Guild essentially says you have to film at least 50% of a movie. If they had 80% and they just did the last 20%, Richard Lester couldn't get credit. So they had to refilm and change a bunch of stuff. So a new 50% of the movie was filmed. New alternate takes were done for some of the movie that already existed. And they basically put together this version of Superman 2 that was a theatrical cut. They inserted a lot more comedy and jokes, which weren't great. Yeah. They chopped up a lot of stuff. They changed a lot of character stuff that is different. But the most notable difference is probably seen at the very beginning of this movie, because, as you said, where is Marlon Brando?
Yeah, he's gone.
There's zero Jor-El, who is a major character in Superman's life. They replaced it with Lara, which, you know, that's fair, but Brando was such a big part of this film because, you know, Jor-El was the connection to Krypton for Superman. What happened there was also part of production. So this is the little last insight that we can talk about here about the production woes. Basically, as the story goes, Brando had a deal to receive profits from the film. He would get a percentage cut from the money the movie made. The movie made a F ton of money. And the story goes, the Salkins didn't want to give him a lot of that money. And so Brando sued them. And he won, because of course he did. And so he got a bunch of money. They got really pissed. And they removed him. They're like, you're not in this movie. Screw you. Wow. You're out. And so when they were doing reshoots. Out, am I? Well, here's the fun part, too. When they were doing the reshoots and when they were trying to film new scenes, Gene Hackman was pissed what they did to Brando. And he said, I'm not coming back. Screw you. So a lot of the Gene Hackman stuff, they had to use some scenes with body doubles from the back for him. Like, because he didn't come back for reshoots. He refused, which... kudos to him. I believe like Kidder and Reeve, they're like under hard contract.
Yeah,
they're,
sure.
They don't have the power of Gene Hackman at this time, right? Like Gene Hackman was a person.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of the changes and the reasons that the Salkins now having more creative control wanted to make it a little more silly in parts. They changed a lot. They had to reshoot a lot. You don't have Brando. You don't have Hackman. So that explains a lot of the backstory. And then many, many, many moons later, there was always a legend of the Donner version, the scenes that were never filmed. And in the Warner Brothers vault, they found a lot of this footage. And they approached Donner. They had a conversation. They mended some bridges there. And they basically allowed, you know, him and some editors and stuff to put together a version of the film as best as they could. Because, again, you only have so much. It's old footage. And they put together the version as close as it could be to what he wanted. And it is crazy because it is a superior version. And my God, I wish we got the full version of it. It's so good that it's just like, God damn, really wish that he had the opportunity to make it as he did.
Because it feels pretty disjointed. I at least really did feel that. And I don't know if I would have felt it if I didn't know that there were, like, behind-the-scenes issues. I feel like I would have noticed that Jor-El is completely absent, because his absence is really felt thematically when this is the movie that's about answering Jor-El's like last act as a Kryptonian other than saving Kal-El. It's all about like the condemnation and incarceration in the Phantom Zone of Zod and Nan and Ursa, and they come back. And Zod coming face to face with the son of Jor-El, which feels, at least in this one, and you tell me if it feels deeper in the sequel, feels really light in the theatrical cut. Like, I feel like it's not as heavy as it ought to be. It feels like they don't address it the way that it would have been addressed, especially if they could have used some more of Marlon Brando in the film. It just feels like there is an entire critical thematic and character element that is gone here. And yeah, it's great that we see more of Superman's mother, that we see more of Lara. That's awesome. But like, Jor-El was Zod's sworn enemy. And in the first movie, Zod says, "I'm going to hold you personally accountable." And so he has Superman dead to rights a few times in this movie, but like, you're not feeling that history there, at least in the way that the Lester cut, the theatrical cut, goes. And I've never seen this movie as a thinking, feeling adult. The last time I saw Superman 2 was as a kid, for sure, and I think single digits would be my guess. There are elements of this that felt like very lived in. I will. You know how like sometimes like you hear phrases and then you have like visual connectors in your mind's eye that like have like basically nothing to do with the phrase, but for whatever reason they're like linked?
Yeah.
So like for me, this is so weird. I will never forget Lois Lane turning around and say, "You're kind of a pain in the neck," to Ursa as she punches her down into the Fortress of Solitude. And for me, for whatever reason, I always visualized a sliced pickle.
That's very odd.
Yeah,
but
I have no idea why, but like as a kid, like I was like, pain in the neck. That probably looks like a sliced pickle, like a little tiny slice of pickle that you'd put on like a Burger King sandwich. And so for whatever reason, like that is indelibly ingrained in my mind. And the whole battle at the Fortress of Solitude, like that, I remembered them all being there. But like, as somebody who like appreciates movies in a different way these days than when I was thinking about pickles while watching Lois Lane knock out Ursa, it is, to me, there are things that are missing that are preventing it from being a great film, Superman 2.
Yeah. And I think ultimately, right, Superman 2 is still a good film. I think there's a lot of good stuff in there. But you are right, like, as especially watching it now.
First, Superman had like one thing. The ending was not great. Ending is not great. Superman 2 has a few things that are not working for me.
Right, and I think a lot of that, again, is the biggest one. I do agree, as an adult watching it, again, separating myself from it, the pacing is way off. The pacing is a mess. And I think a lot of that, again, is attributed to the production. And a lot of stuff, like you said, the stuff with Jor-El does feel disconnected because he's not there. There's so much more. There's so much more with him in the Donner cut. And I think it lends itself to a lot of, not even direct connection to Zod, but like the presence of him and his, when he talks about Zod at one point, like it all brings it back together. Even the beginning, like if this leads us into how we talk about the movie piece by piece, I think this is where what you're saying makes total sense. Because in the beginning of the Lester version, they're showing that scene on Krypton, but there's no Jor-El. There's some other weird voice talking about them. And then you just see the floating heads and you're just like, even in that moment, you're like, okay, that's weird that he's not there for
this,
that they're showing this scene. And in the Donner cut, to talk off immediately, like, yeah, it's the real scene. It's the scene from the first. Jor-El is there. He's the one explaining the crimes. He's the one interacting with Zod right back and forth in those moments. And this is where things get wonky and interesting, you know, because the movie kicks off from there. Once they hit the Phantom Zone, the movie essentially kicks off, right? And I will say, I did like the main credits over events from the first movie that they did. I don't know how you felt about that, but I was kind of into that. I'm always a sucker for like, here's the recap and during the credits, you know what happened.
I loved it for a very specific reason. I loved it because it gave me an automatic like 5 minutes of the movie that I could fast forward through. It bought me some time, which I appreciated.
That's fair.
You know, I had just watched it, you know, and so I was like, I'm good. I would have appreciated it in the movies for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But like, so the Lester, that's the Lester version. They're doing a recap of the first movie. Sure. Even here, the Donner cut is immediately different because, as mentioned, the Donner ending to Superman 1 was different. So they wanted to show that. And I think it's really interesting because, like, so you have the scene with Jor-El, you have Krypton happen, you see the rocket fly out of Krypton, and it sees as Krypton explodes and the rocket is going, you see the Phantom Zone criminals, like, as the rocket passes, and a wave of Krypton essentially throws them into the trail of the rocket. So while the rocket is speeding along, they're essentially following its trail over time. So it's explaining why the Phantom Zone criminals ended up near Earth to begin with.
Yeah.
Is already being explained right there. And then for this, they're showing the ending of Superman 1, where they shoot the two rockets, Lex throws them into the pool, and this time when he grabs the rocket and tosses it, before going to California, you see the rocket fly and go past Saturn and then explode. And the Phantom Zone criminals are like, they had arrived in the crystal, and it basically shatters and breaks them apart. And you see them stabilize themselves, look towards Earth, and Zod screaming like, free, and like starts flying. And that's how the movie starts off. So it immediately sets up the idea of like, this is who they are. This is how it happened. This is how Superman connect. Like, it's so much smoother and better. Whereas the Lester version has this whole weird scene.
Yeah.
The Eiffel Tower. That they had to make up. The Eiffel Tower scene.
This is effectively the beginning of the movie, right? Is like there's a terrorist situation at the Eiffel Tower.
That's why they're terrorists, Kent.
Oh, it's such a good line where Clark is talking to Perry White. He's like, that's terrible. Well, that's why they're called terrorists, Clark. And like Lois is there. She's in the thick of it. She's like getting even deeper in. She like hooks herself to the elevator. She's like, oh, God. They're just like showing like dogged reporter Lois Lane, like getting into the thick of the thing. But really the whole point of this very strange scene where Superman disarms a bunch of like French terrorists who have a nuclear bomb that they're going to detonate from the Eiffel Tower is so that he can bring the elevator with the nuclear bomb on it out into space, toss it out deeper into space, and the nuclear bomb will destroy the Phantom Zone and release Zod and Nan and Ursa, which
correct.
We'll come to find out later when I think it's Luther is in the Fortress of Solitude, where Lara is explaining, because of course they can't get Marlon Brando for this, a nuclear blast is like the one thing we really don't want. You really don't want like an elevator with a nuclear bomb on it from France to go into space. So that's the whole reason why they have this whole
Paris sequence, right?
And this was all reshoot, Kevin.
Yeah, all reshoot.
Yeah.
All reshoot was this because they had to explain how they got free. And I hate that they added only a hydrogen bomb because in the original, it's just he tosses the damn rocket and it explodes, and it's just like, yeah, there was in the vicinity of a huge explosion.
And again, just to clarify, it's the hydrogen bomb from Superman 1. It's the Lex Luthor bomb that Superman averts that was going to incinerate New Jersey. That he launches out, and by virtue of like his first like major rescue effort on Earth in the first Superman movie, is going to bring these Kryptonian nightmares to Earth. So it's
correct.
Actually connecting. Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like that a lot.
Yeah, it's great.
The Paris sequence is, like, when I watched it the first time, it's fine, but, like, you really see a lot more. And this sort of sets up problems that I notice in the two cuts, where Lois is okay, but she really throws herself in the Lester version as a damsel in distress often. She's in distress often in the Lester version. And it starts off immediately where she's, like, running up there to get the story, but then puts herself on the bottom of the elevator, which also Can we talk about the Paris police being like, I don't know, like probably kind of dumb in this because they know it's a hydrogen bomb and their reaction is like the hydrogen bomb is in the elevator. And it's like, okay, cool. Drop the elevator. And I'm like, what?
I don't know that it's going to work the way you want it to.
Yeah. I'm just like, why would you make that call? Like, even if it didn't, the countdown didn't start. I'm like, that feels highly dangerous. Like, maybe don't do that. So that entire sequence is weird. It only exists to explain how they get free. And then you have this moment where they cut to, you know, they get back to now the Daily Planet again. So it's this weird sequence. I feel like you're going from like, you know, here's the Krypton stuff. Here's the credits. Okay. Daily Planet. Clark has to know he has to go to Paris. Okay. Now we're in Paris. Okay, great. Now we're back at the Daily Planet. And Lois is at the Daily Planet. You have this weird sequence where that car, the taxi cab, hits Clark.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of like, dude, there's a bunch of people around. Didn't they see that? Like,
yeah, they're not going to automatically connect, like, that guy got hit by a car and he's okay. He's Superman.
Yeah, that's fair. But the sequence in this now has this, like, I don't know. It was weird to watch because I did watch the Lester one first. And it is, like, when Clark and Lois are interacting with each other with the orange juice, like, they were very good banter. But
is the orange juice not in the Donner cut?
No, because so the Donner cut, because like in storytelling, you don't always have to explain everything, especially background stuff. So in the Donner cut, there is references to the fact that Lois likes freshly squeezed.
She loves orange juice.
She likes orange juice and she likes freshly squeezed, but they just say it twice. Like there's a point, the Niagara Falls thing where she's like, oh, an orange juice. And he's like, ah, oh, freshly squeezed. And later on, he makes the like, no orange juice this time. But they don't show her having to juice her own oranges because you don't need to see a scene like that. You can get it just from the context of the two conversation beats.
Although but I kind of love that, like, Lois is just chain smoking, squeezing her own orange juice. She's like, it's to keep you healthy. And Clark's just like looking at her, just like going through like her 17th cigarette in a minute.
Right.
It was pretty hilarious.
It's ridiculous. And there is no like heavy smoking in the Donner cut, which I like. Like you see her holding a cigarette at one point, but there's no like crazy smoking because like, you know, he wasn't like keen to be showing, especially 2006.
Sure.
Like, but like he squeezes his hand in the juicer and I'm like, but why? Did you want her to see that? Wouldn't she notice that your hand didn't get crushed? What's happening in that scene? It's a very weird moment. And it sets up then, you know, they have this interaction. It's to set up Lois's pining over Superman still. And that's all fine. It's enjoyable. But like, again, the differences come really, really, really fast. Like, let's say like all like this segment, right? What happens in the Donner cut that I really, really love is it actually starts off like Zod gets free. So it starts off immediately at the Daily Planet and you have Lois and Clark both there. You have the planet like talking about the Superman saving them with the rockets, like all that stuff, you know, in the front line, Perry White is like, you know, like that's a paper, you know? And Clark is talking to Jimmy and Lois is there and they're talking about something and Lois clicks in her brain where it's like, where was Clark when that happened?
Mm-hmm.
And you have this scene where Lois looks over at Clark, looks down at this photo of Superman and like has this thing, like gets this look on her face and grabs a marker and immediately draws like, it's like a jacket, a hat, and glasses, and on Superman, and like looks up, and it's just like, oh, and so like she figures it out immediately
in this Donner movie cut.
In the Donner cut,
yeah.
And so what happens is, and I love this scene in the Donner cut because you then have this moment where Perry calls him into the office. They start talking to Perry and he's setting up, you're going to go to Niagara Falls. There's this honeymoon racket that they're doing. And he explains the story, which I think is a lot better because in the other one, they just go to Niagara Falls and he explains why they're going and you get banter.
I didn't mind that we didn't know like that, like they just get toured through the honeymoon suite and they're just like here to like bust open a honeymoon racket. It was kind of hilarious.
It is funny, but I like that it's just they explain a little bit better in the Donner cut, but you have interactions between Lois and Clark in the Donner cut that you see immediately in this moment, even when Lois has figured it out, she's joshing Clark and like messing with him and making jokes. And their interplay is so good. And it's not just Lois pining for Superman, Clark being sad that, like, you know, like, he can't be with Lois. It's like, these two are messing around each other as if they're friends. You see a real friendship and bond between these two characters in the Donner cut that I really like. So Perry says this, he leaves the office, and Lois is just like, oh, you're Superman. You know, and he's like, what are you talking about? I'm not Superman. And she's like, no, I'm pretty sure you're Superman. She goes over to the window, she raises the blinds, and she's like, what are you doing, Lois? And she just goes, don't worry, you wouldn't let me die, and leaps out the window. And it's it's such a Silver Age Lois Lane moment to just be like, no, I'm pretty sure you're Superman. I'm gonna jump out this window. You wouldn't let me die. And she jumps. And it's amazing. And so Clark is like, oh shit.
Yeah.
And so you see him zoom through the planet and the thing where like the papers fly up for a moment as he like goes downstairs. And this is where it's sort of like the Niagara Falls moment where she's falling. So he like uses his breath to like slow her descent and then pops open an awning. So she falls onto the awning and falls onto a bunch of fruit and then zooms back up. So he's looking out the window. And so she sees him and is just like, oh, you're okay. Oh, and she like passes out because she realizes she made a mistake. That scene is so fun, and I think better than what they did with the Niagara Falls
moment.
So the
Niagara Falls, because what happens in the theatrical cut is they go to Niagara Falls. They're assigned to like bust open the honeymoon suite racket.
Yes.
And like a kid who's clearly going to fall off into the falls ends up falling off into the falls. Clark has been sent to go get hot dogs and orange juice. Clark sees this happen, turns into Superman, goes and saves the kid. Lois has this connection of Clark's never around when Superman's around. Oh shit, Clark is Superman. And then she's going to like prove it to him, be like, I'm pretty sure you're Superman, and here's how I know. And she jumps into Niagara Falls, and Clark bumbles his way through saving her without exposing himself as Superman. He uses like his X-ray vision, which, by the way, works through his glasses without incinerating his glasses. Come on. He does that. Like, he does like a few things to like say, it is cute. He stumbles forward into the water. Like, I do really like none of that is in the Donner cut.
The only thing in the Donner cut is the kid falling into the river. So in the Donner cut, you know, they go to the honeymoon suite. This is like after these scenes, Lois feels pretty embarrassed about everything. They go to Niagara Falls. That is all still there. They don't do the heavy tour of the room. That's all cut, which again, I like because that's just more about the Lois and Clark pining versus Lois and Clark bantering. So they just keep the banter between these characters as a forefront. And Lois has more of a chance to shine as Lois Lane with this like strong, fun personality than Lois Lane, the damsel or weeping about Superman character. And so I like that. And so you have the scene where they're there, the kid who was doing that to begin with, they warn them like, hey, the parents, and then the parents look away immediately. And the kid goes right back to it. Not a smart kid. And then the kid falls. And then Superman does save the kid, and there's a scene where, you know, he's just like, only one ride per customer, and then flies off, and Lois is like, hey, Superman, it's me. And then, like, when he leaves, she's like, okay, I guess, bye. And that's where the scene ends, you know, in the Donner cut. In the Lester cut, you have Clark coming back. You have her like, wait a minute. So you kind of have the same, I think they were trying to do the same, like, beat and have the same, like, feeling of it. But to me, I just really like, immediately, it's not... She had to see the sequence happen. She had to like put that like immediately. She's just like looking at him and then looking at this picture is just like, I think this man's Superman. And then like does it and then jumps out the window. And it's kind of amazing to have it more like that, especially the way she does it is a little more fun. And I just really like that in the Donner cut. So obviously that scene had to go for a number of reasons. You couldn't have her jump into Niagara Falls twice and right. Again for the reshoots.
Right.
But this also led to some other interesting stuff that's coming up. And this is jumping a bit ahead. We'll back up in a little minute to get to the other side stories happening. But this is another huge, huge difference. Because let's talk about what happened after this moment.
So just so I'm on the same page as you, we're tracking Superman and Lois right now.
Yes.
Okay, great. Yeah, because like what happens in the Lester cut is... She falls in, he manages to preserve his cover for a little while, but then they do go back to the honeymoon suite, and he just sort of, like, trips and falls into a fire, and, like, she goes to, like, check his hand out, and he hasn't been burned, and it is the lovely moment where, like, he straightens up and turns around, and he's clearly Superman, I think we should talk, I'm in love with you. that we really ought to talk. It's such a good line. It's a really good exchange. And he's like, I think we should go back to my place. And it's going to be how he's going to show her to the Fortress of Solitude. But what happens there is like he kind of does just like sort of like he trips and falls. And there's really no one
He survivors his way into a damn fire. Like he just trips and falls into a fire.
No, there's like there's nothing really clever about what happens there. Like what I appreciated up to this point is that like Lois is just like Lois Laning her way into finally being like, no, this dude's the same guy. Like I'm happy that like they're giving her that. But like the final moment where Clark and Superman are revealed to be the same person, it's not because like Lois has detected it, and it's not because like Superman like chose to reveal it, unless you believe this is what was in your heart, Clark. Otherwise, like Superman literally like tripped over his own shoelaces. Effectively, yeah. Is like how the theatrical cut presents it. But then before we signed on today, you did send me this clip from the Donner cut, and I know that last week you had told me that there was like a scene from Donner that you really wanted me to check out. Is this the one?
This is the one.
Okay.
And to me, this is so that's how it happens in Lester. And even younger, even you know, watching it, I always had a problem with the idea of the Superman tripped his way into a fire, and that's how she found out because he didn't get burned.
How'd he get burned?
Yeah, imagine now Nicolas Cage, which obviously there's a connection there, but you know, and then it's just like maybe you wanted it to be revealed, and it's just like I guess. So I didn't like that, but then when I saw the Donner cut. Holy crap. So in the Donner cut, the scene happens again where Superman flies off and they go back to when they're back in the honeymoon suite. Lois comes out of the shower after having, you know, and Clark comes into the room there and they start talking. They're talking about what's happening. She mentioned and she's very like, again, witty banter all the way through between these two. And she's like commenting about like, oh, yeah, you always are missing the fun, you know, all this stuff. And he's like, oh, you're talking about Superman again, always with Superman. And she's just like, well, I mean, it's hard to be jealous of yourself, right? And he's just like, oh, we're back to this. You're doing this again. And Lois just has like this smile on her face and like this smirk. And she's like, you know, see, here's the problem. The problem is when I first When I first had this theory, I put myself in danger when really what I should have been doing is putting you in danger. And she pulls out a gun and you're just like, whoa. And he's, of course, like, hey, Lois, wait, chill out. She's like, no, I'm so certain that you're Superman that, you know, that I'm going to shoot you and nothing will happen. And don't pretend to fall down because you'll just have to get back up again. And so he's like bumbling his way, being like, oh, watch out. What? And she pulls a trigger. There's a shot. And this is, to me, another quintessential, like, oh my god, the gun goes off and you see him like hunched over bumbly Clark Kent, you hear the bang of the gun and you just see him straighten up immediately and like takes off the glasses and crosses his arms just like, and she's like, oh, I knew it. And he's like, you know, if you were wrong, Clark Kent would be dead.
Because he's pissed.
And
she just, he's not happy that like the woman he loves just tried to shoot a man to prove her point. Like this is like an austere father type of moment.
Right. Yeah. And then she says in response, not with blanks. And you see his face like oh my
she
god. And
you.
She just goes, gotcha.
Gotcha.
And I love that scene so, so much because one, it is showing again Chris Reeve's ability to be Clark and Superman, and that transition is so good. It's insane. You see Lois as she should be. You see the reveal happening because Lois tricks him into it in a very smart and clever way. Like, I love all of that because it's such a character moment for Lois. It's such a character moment for Clark. It's such a character moment for Superman. It's incredibly, incredibly well done. And to me, it's like one of the defining moments in the franchise because it sums up those characters really well. It sums up them really, like the themes really well. And also, here's the funnest fact of this, Josh. This scene was Christopher Reeves' screen test.
Huh, that's funny.
This is how this man walked in to essentially be like, hey, you should cast me as Superman, and did that.
Yeah,
and I can
good.
Only imagine watching that and just being like, this man's Superman. Like, this is it. This is it. So those are actually scenes from both of their screen tests that they spliced together even. They weren't even in the same room. They were doing it originally with different people. So, again, showing what they were trying to do with the Donner cut and trying to put stuff together. It's just so incredible, and I love that reveal so much more than the one we got. It's just, that not with blanks moment, and seeing Superman realize, like, oh, god damn it. Like, well, it's so great.
It's great because it plays to the strengths of every character in the scene. I guess there's two characters in the scene. I guess technically there's three characters in the scene, yeah, if you define Superman and Clark as different characters. Certainly, in a very strange segment, the movie will do that. There's the fact that, like, Clark is preserving his cover as best as he can, which he's doing because he feels like if anyone knows, then they're in danger. He doesn't want to endanger anybody. It's a lonely existence, but he loves being Clark Kent. So I think that there's also like a degree to which this is fun. But then you have like this very Superman moment where he's not just going to get shot, and he's certainly not like the better option would be for him to blow his cover in front of Lois rather than what, like, get shot as Clark and make her feel like she shot a person, and also to then not admonish her for shooting someone. Like, that would be very anti-Superman. So he has like this look on his face. But the best part is that it is for Lois. It's just very clever. And she gets to outsmart Superman, who's not exactly great with deception. Like, you know, we talk about what are Superman's weaknesses.
Low deception score.
You know, we talk about what are Superman's weaknesses, and yeah, there's kryptonite, and sure, there's magic, and I guess there's also a hyperdraulic chamber where, like, you put him in the thing, and, like, he doesn't have his powers anymore. But also, he's weak to, like, the cleverness of man. Like human ingenuity, he's not exactly hip to all the time. So Lois being cleverer than Clark is so true to character, and it's just such a better way to do it. Such a better way to do it than him falling into the fire.
Yeah. And again, like, I think just knowing that it's his screen test, right, is so crazy. Seeing that, like, he came into and in his screen test did the, like, oh, no, don't do it, Lois, and then just that straighten up immediately. It's so seamless and so amazing. It's just, it's really well done. And so that's sort of what was happening with the Lois and Clark stuff. And I think the reveal is probably a good point to do a little bit of a backup, because
sure,
while all this is happening, we have two segments going on. I think there's the Lex Luthor stuff. Right, we
which
have
is
Lex in jail.
Really straightforward in the Lester movies so far, or in the Lester movie so far, which is, you know, he's in jail. He and Otis are in jail. I was a little confused, but also didn't spend much time thinking about it because it was great of how they were able to get like a holographic camera, basically, in their jail cell. I just chalked it up to Lex Luthor's a super genius, and I'm fine. I don't need to know anything more than that.
Same. And I think that is a fine reasoning. It's just like, he's really smart.
He's like Luthor. He somehow managed to either like smuggle in or like jerry rig some sort of holographic camera that makes it look like he and Otis are still in the cell, and buys him enough time to get on the hot air balloon with Mr. Schmucker, and is able to escape. But he just like totally punks Otis and lets Otis.
Which I'm fine
take the
with.
Ball.
That was enough Otis for me for the movie.
Do you ever see Otis again? Is he in the.
No.
Yeah, so that's it. Okay, cool.
I like that. I mean, because, like, of course, Lex is going to be like, yo, peace out. Yeah. Bye. I have my use of you.
Bye, Mr. Luthor. Yeah. I love Otis, but that's fine. And so, like, he then, North, Mr. Schmucker, North! They go to the Fortress of Solitude, and he goes and he sees, like, the origins of Superman. But then the movie kind of, like, leaves you a little bit in the dark as to, like, what did he do next, and where does he go from there? How much does he know? And the next time you see him in the theatrical cut, he is at the White House when Zod shows up there. We'll talk about Zod in a minute, I'm sure. But I kept thinking, like, during the Lester cut, during what I was watching, the official Superman 2, is he not still just in the Fortress of Solitude? Is he not just going to pop up when Superman and Lois are there? And he never does. So I'm kind of in the dark as to where is Lex during so much of the movie. And then when he just pops up in the White House, I'm not fully able to do the same thing I did where he just has a holographic thing in prison. It's like, I feel like the movie isn't like showing me totally cards up what's supposed to be going on with Lex. So that's how it's presented in the official. What's the Lex storyline in Donner up to this point?
So it's not that super far off, pun intended, but it is, to me, better because you get more. More extended scenes of what we got. So the prison stuff is basically the same, but even in both versions, there's a quick note, and watching in both, you really get it, where Lex is talking to Otis originally, and he mentions how he's been, he's, you know, like, oh, Superman, you know, he's like, always flies off, and it's just like, yeah, but where to? And Otis is like, north, and he's like, why north? And he's just like, maybe he likes skiing, and he's just like, yeah, you're an idiot. And so, like, he's flying somewhere, and so Lex says that he has this little black box, this thing he created, that is tracking the alpha waves that Superman extends out, which are different from humans. So he's been tracking where Superman has been going in this box, and he's going to use that to follow north to figure out where he goes. So when he escapes, that's what he does. He goes with Mr. Teschmacher. There's a little bit more between them. There's a lot more banter that to contrast, honestly, Lois and Clark, because where Lois and Clark have this fun, like, friendly banter, Lex is, like, very mean to Ms. Teschmacher, and they show the banter as being, like, really not great, but, like, again, a contrast, right? And when they get there, in the Lester version, he does this stuff where he's using the crystals, but it's, again, very short, it's with Lara, and, like, it's with some random Kryptonian reciting the poem, and, like, she does this weird thing where she has pre-recorded answers on the presumption of knowing what Superman is gonna say, which is very odd to me, so they find out very quickly, like, oh, there's other Kryptonians and maybe a hydrogen bomb. And so Lex is just like, ah, a hydrogen bomb must have freed them. Well, we should go find them. And then he leaves. In the Donner cut, it's Jor-El. He puts the thing in and Jor-El shows up and Lex is like, oh, huh, that's weird. I must be his dad. They look a lot alike. And he starts listening to everything he's saying, like, you are my son, Kal-El. You have come from Krypton. And Lex is like, basically listening and putting crystal after crystal to learn everything he can.
So you're about, like, in like a montage, effectively?
Yeah, like you see him going through different crystals. You see, like,
gives
Jor-El
you like a sense of like
stuff.
Both like passage of time and also like depth of interest for Lex.
Right, and the other stuff you're getting is where you're talking about the Zod stuff, because when he puts the crystal in to learn about Zod, Brando talks at length about, like, this is who Zod is, this is who Ursa is, this is who Nan is, this is what they tried to do, we were able to stop them, we have no death penalty, and in both versions, I like that Lex is, like, sensible enough,
yeah,
because even Lex is gets the death penalty,
funny.
And talks about, like, you know, like, if they were to ever go free, like, it'd be bad, like, they have a lot more with this interaction with Lex and him learning stuff, and Lex basically says, oh, okay, I tracked, like, three other alpha waves recently in this box, and I was wondering what the hell those are. It must be these three, then. Like, and so Lex is basically figuring out, like, they must have gotten free. This has to be the three other waves I've been seeing. So I'm going to follow them, and I'm going to find out where they're going to be, and I will go. So that's how he gets to the White House, because he's using the same tech he used to find Superman and follow Superman to then follow them to the White House. So there's more of an explanation, there's more of a connection. Again, it's an extended scene, but it gives you the
it's
detail.
Important. Yeah.
It's important.
I think
and
I do
also,
I did miss that. Like how is he gonna even know where to go and how's he getting there? Like all that, like I did feel like I wanted some of that.
And it shows Lex Luthor's, and I really like Lex Luthor in this because it does show a bit more of his intelligence in these moments of like figuring stuff out, deducing stuff, using stuff to his advantage. I like it a lot better than the stuff in one. So that's what Lex was doing up until this point. And it's also why you also see him leaving. You also see him piecing out of the fortress with Ms. Teschmacher, who he abandons at some point because she's gone. And then, so that's how that happens. And then shortly after that is where Lois and Clark will end up showing up in the fortress after their reveal. But again, while all this is going on, we have the Zod, Ursa, Nan stuff.
We should talk about Zod, Ursa, and Nan.
This is a perfect point, too. Yeah. Because as I'm saying this, too, the Lester version intersperses stuff here and there about where all these things are going on. But it feels really disjointed. All these scenes, in my opinion, that we're talking about flow a lot better in the Donner cut. The pacing of all of it feels very precise. And like when you cut to certain moments, it's at the right time. It's at the right moments. And I think it flows the pacing a lot better.
Okay.
But Ursa, Nan, and Zod, they get free and they show up and their first thing is on the moon.
In both versions?
In both versions. Great. Well, they like, you know, they shatter at the beginning of Donner, and he does it like free, and you see them flying towards it, so you see them on the way. But the moon is the first moment to really get them.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I love this scene.
I love that. I
so much.
Well, one of the things that I really love about it is I love the contrast between man on the moon and Kryptonian on the moon. In like the way that they move is so neat. I also just love the costume design for Zod and Ursa.
I wrote down like Ursa's sleeves. I'm obsessed with her like slitted sleeves. I'm so into them.
You know, I know it's like 80-81, but like it's the 70s. So like it's so great. It really looks so great. And they
Robin wants to wear that outfit now. She's like, do you think I can pull that off? I want to pull that off.
Yes. Please let Robin know I said yes. Yeah, it's just, it's great. It's so alien, and it's so like kind of like gothic alien. And I also, there is like a some of like the physicality of the movie. Sometimes it's a little hit or miss with me. The fact that everybody's arms have to go forward in order for them to fly just like cracks me up every time. But there is like the way that they like move the astronauts as they're like slowly like maiming and basically murdering them is so chilling, because it's filmed the way that it is, because it's kind of lo-fi and 1970s ish, that like they're like pulling them like by like the back of the shirt and the back of the pants basically, and just like throwing them off into space. There is this quality to it that feels like pulling wings off of a fly. Like there is like that menace to it that's really, really like upsetting and kind of gross, but also like a little hinky and weird and sort of like oddly done, that makes there is this level of surreality to it that I think makes it really, really, really effective. This is the stuff that like when I have the sense memory of like the Zod of it all is so frightening in these movies, and like ways in which like that is measuring up to my experience revisiting it this week versus where it's not. I think the places where it's not is that like it's lacking some measure of gravitas from a story perspective for me. But in like scene presentation and in performance, it's definitely still hitting those notes. And the scene on the moon is number one. Clearly, obviously, it's no Nuclear Man, but what could be?
It's fantastic for all the reasons you said, and I think it's so well executed. It's a phenomenal intro to the villains of this movie, and especially, look, if you know anything about me, you know I was very into Ursa, and so like even now I'm just like, man, what an intro to this character. I love the wings off a fly thing is so. Especially her when she shows up, right? Because she's the first one. She lands in front of this astronaut and, you know, it's just like, you know, what are you supposed to be? And he's just like, I'm just a man. And she's like, just a man. And like reaches to go tear the patch off of his suit. And like he like gets freaked out and he starts jumping away. And she just immediately goes on the other side of him, tears it off, watches him squirm, and then just kicks him into space.
Yeah.
And obviously immediately I'm like, this woman's awesome. But like, like, I love every part of it, because it's them finding out like this is what we can do now, and just being sort of just like analytical and weird and horrifying about it. They smash that space station. I like Nan when he just picks up the two flags and has them over his back, because it's this idea of like the space race was a thing. Look at the achievement that Russia and, well, the Soviet Union and America were both struggling to do, to fight to get to, and these guys just demolish it. And he picks up both flags because both are meaningless to these people. I love that. I love the subtlety in this moment and in this sequence. It's so good.
Yeah. I really like it as well. It really, like, that was the thing that just like kept coming to mind, like wings off a fly. Like it really does. And then there's like some of the humor to it of like Houston.
Yes, because they don't, why would they know?
Yeah, let us go to this planet Houston. You know, it's just it's really great.
And that's sort of like where their story continues while all this stuff is going. Again, the interspersing, right? So you have Zod, Ursa, and Nan, which, you know, just from some comic book history, Zod is a character that was from the comics. Ursa and Nan were made up from the for the movie. Ursa is based on an actual character, Feora, who is in the Man of Steel. And Nan has become, in fact, both Ursa and Nan are now in canon in the comics. But they were essentially made for this film and have become so iconic as Zod had. Zod was not a major Superman villain in the comics at all.
Yeah.
And now he's just like one of the Superman villains. So this movie, that shows the impact of this movie and of Terrence Stamp's performance. I mean, certainly at the beginning when he was yelling, you know, like, "You will kneel down before me, Jor-El," is very much like Michael Shannon channeled that in the, like, "I will find him." Like, you know, it's the same energy they were bringing.
Yeah.
But then you see them go to Earth. You have the scene of them like learning
walking
about
on
their powers,
water. And
which was,
I guess,
great.
I did. So obviously their powers are stronger on Earth. On Krypton, do they not have any?
No.
Okay.
No powers. This isn't like the Viltrumites, right? This isn't the Viltrumites where they have powers, to reference another podcast, where they have powers no matter what. There has been versions, in the early, early, early Golden Age where, sometimes they did have powers, on Krypton to like leap and stuff like that, but that has changed a lot. And now the standard is while on Krypton, they never had powers. They only have powers on Earth because of, the yellow sun.
Got it.
So yeah, that's the setup here. So they're learning about all this stuff. You see them doing the walking on water. You see them flying. You see the heat vision happen. And you have this scene where they, run into police officers, which, the scene with the, like, in the forest with the snake and stuff is like cut shorter to, again, cut out the goofiness of Nan trying to use heat vision and failing. That sort of stuff doesn't happen, but you do see Ursa use it. So it's those little pieces setting it up to be a little more serious and a little more threatening. And then the cop scene happens, and this is almost identical. I like that these two police officers show up, and I have this in my notes, because these cops show up, and they're like, "Hey, what are you guys doing here?" And Ursa, of course, goes over and sees his little badge, and just reaches forward, tears the badge off him. And what does this man do just from having his badge taken? He pulls a shotgun on her.
I know.
I wrote down ACAP because, like he pulls a shotgun just because
what
she
is,
took
what
the,
is the
badge off him.
The guy is like, "You're never going to be like a mean shooter unless," what he says something. I forget the exact phrase. But yeah, like there was some definitely like I was like pointing at the bad cops. Yeah. Like definitely a few of those moments for sure.
And I like this sequence, right? Because like, again, this idea of like these people just experimenting and like wandering their way through some of the most dangerous weapons we have, where, you know, he heat visions the gun, and then Zod like basically is just like, "What is this thing?" Points it to himself, pull the triggers. You see the bang, and it nothing. I like the sequences they shot here. I really bizarrely love the like simplicity of like bang, and he's just standing there as if it's just like whatever, and then like drops the gun. Also, I don't know if you noticed this. You probably have. Ursa's collection keeps growing throughout the movie.
Yes.
Like her outfit just gets
I think it wasn't until like I saw that she had like all of like the military armaments on.
It's so good.
It was really funny.
I love that. Yeah. That love that character beat.
So they're just like ripping it up
in
Texas. So are they pretty close?
So this is where some differences happen. One, and I will say every now and then there's something in the Lester version I like, right? So this is almost identical. They still have this one scene, and this will be important because when he heat visions the gun, for some reason it also levitates towards him, right? That's not a thing that Kryptonians can do.
Okay.
And there's a lot of instances in the Lester cut of weird things where you're just like, that's not one of their powers. Like, he points at one person and levitates them into the... That's not a thing. So a lot of that stuff is cut. They had... That one part with the gun is kept because they didn't have a scene where he gets heat vision, he dropped it and then picked it up. And so that is the one, but a lot of other stuff is cut with the weird Kryptonian powers not in there. And I appreciate that because it's a lot of questions about why. But the town stuff, where they actually show up to the town. And again, I love the little beats. I love Ursa going to arm wrestling that guy and smashing him through the floor. Like, I think that's fantastic. Them wrecking that town, I thought was good. I didn't like the little kid with the, like, "Please, Mr. General, please let my daddy down." Like, I didn't like that.
You
I was
didn't.
Just like, oh, God.
Oh, man. That was kind of good, no?
Eh.
No,
and,
I'm kidding.
I like them wrecking the town. In the Donner cut, we don't see the wrecking of the town. We see the part with the cops, and when they cut back, it's just like, three people have wrecked this town, and we don't know how. Like, holy crap.
Yeah.
So you miss the actual town attack, which I personally do like. I like that town scene.
Yeah. No, I like it, too. I like it as well. Like, I have no issue with it other than, like, my issues come a little bit later. Right now, I'm pretty good. All right, so we should hop back to Superman and Lois, I think. So
because this is where a lot of back and forth is going to happen, where Superman and Lois are doing their thing, and we keep seeing what Zod, Ursa, and Nan are doing, which is wrecking shop across Texas and then the U.S.
And the way that the theatrical version presents this is that this is why Superman is completely unaware of Zod. He's busy in the Fortress of Solitude with Lois. They're like sealing the deal. He's letting her in on all the secrets. He goes and like plucks her flowers from like the rainforest, and they enjoy champagne instead of orange juice. And we before we even see them kiss, I think in the theatrical cut we see them like post coitus. We see them in like his like sleep blanket bed.
Yeah,
his bed looks weird as hell. Yeah, I gotta say.
There's this scene where in both versions he's just like, do you like it about the fortress? And she's like, yeah. And in my head I'm just like, dude, this is like a weird empty ice palace. You need some decorations. I will say in the comics,
it needs a lady's touch, she says.
It needs a lady's touch, right? Like, I think Ms. Teschmacher says that. And in the comics, though, the fortress is awesome. Like, the Fortress of Solitude in the comics has so much stuff. It's like the Batcave. There's so much, like, cool, interesting, fun, sci-fi, weird stuff in it. And I wish that was in these. So, like, in this, the fortress is so bland. And then it's just, like, also here's a weird gray bed blanket spread. And
it's
I'm just
so
like,
odd.
It's so odd. Super weird. Yeah.
Is there anything meaningfully different here? Because I think, like, the big thing to start talking through then, if not, is... Lois is going to overhear Superman talking to his mother and finding out that like he can be with her, but only if he removes his powers. He has to become mortal. And so he just does this without consulting Lois at all and without having any kind of conversation. Like she said, I think I'm in love with you. I'm in love with you. And then they've had like one night together. And he's been spending all of this time with her lying about who he actually is. And over the course of 3 hours now now she knows, and now I want to be with her forever. And so I'm going to give away all my Superman powers without a conversation with Lois. And Lois is also just going to watch all of this happen and not intercede at all. And then it's going to be done. And I gotta be honest, I hate it. I hate it. I think it's bad. I think this part is stupid. I think I really don't like the... because we talked about this a lot when we did Spider-Man 2. Like, I don't love the hero loses their powers storyline. It's just kind of whatever. Like, who are you without your powers? It's just, like, totally whatever to me. And I think it is not just, like, remarkably whatever to me here in Superman 2, but also, like, I don't know that I like the way that all of that plays out when you line it up on a timeline. I don't know that it totally tracks for me. So, like, does Donner make this better, or am I still going to be unsatisfied?
I think maybe you might be, but is it better? Yes. So the theatrical version is pretty much like as you said, right? And I think, you know, again, we only have these like brief moments with Lois and Superman and you know, in the Lester cut, right? In the theatrical one. And then he has a very short conversation with his mom. I love her. I want to, you know, I just want to be human. And just like, okay, here's how you do it. Cool. The Donner cut, there's, like I said, there's a lot more interplay with Lois and Clark throughout the beginning of the film. So it doesn't feel like it's just this one moment and one conversation. There's a banter that happens. There's connections that happen. You do feel it, I think, a little more that these two characters have interest in each other and a complicated relationship. Does he consult Lois in either version? No. And I think what I like about this part of it is the consequence we see later, because there is, you know, just to jump slightly further ahead, there is a moment that I really like where Lois is, says, like, after he gets beaten up, like, I just want to, you know, I just only want the person I fell in love with. And Clark is the one who says, I wish he was here right now. But for Lois, he is. Like, it doesn't matter to her, you know? And I think a lot of it is in Clark's own head. And I think a lot of what happens is his own fault. And what you get in the Donner cut is a much longer conversation, not with his mom, but with Jor-El. And he calls up Jor-El. And what I do like, actually, and this is really dumb, but it's a minor thing that I like a lot, is that in the Lester version, he's in his Superman outfit when he's talking to his mom. And he goes into that chamber, and for whatever reason in that version, the chamber does the thing, and his costume goes away, and he merges as Clark Kent in, like, the button-up shirt and slacks, right?
It's so weird that, like, he then just, like, emerges and he's got, like, this khaki jacket.
Correct. So, in the Donner cut, when he's there talking to Jor-El, he is in the, like, no jacket, but, like, the button-up shirt, the top, like, two buttons undone, and slacks. And it is a moment where he's talking to Jor-El and, like, they're having a conversation, and I'm looking at this and I'm like, this is the first time we're seeing the real person. Because this is the kid and that we saw in that first movie in Smallville.
Right.
Because Clark Kent that we see as a disguise, the one in the suit with the button up and the tie and all of that, that's not really him. Superman, the one who's, like, you know, big and tall all the time, that's also not him. This guy who's, like, casually dressed kind of and is having a conversation where he's just like, and the conversation is way more extended, where he's just like, look, I've done a lot for this planet already. Like, all I want is to, like, have some happiness in my life. And if I'm Superman, I can never have that. I'll never not be able to, like, not do this. And the dad is basically like, look, I'm telling you, I see where you're coming, but, like, you have a responsibility here. Like, you have these powers. If you leave these people, like, they're not going to be able to, like, handle it themselves. Are you going to even be okay with that? Like, there's going to be a time where something might happen and you would need these powers. And he's just like, I love her. This is what I want. I want to do this. The conversation feels so genuine. It feels so intimate in a way between him and Jor-El. You really see the actual, this is Clark Kent / Superman in this moment. This is the person that we know, and it makes sense. So to me, the Donner cut does a way better job of establishing the choice he's making, why he's making it, and the fault in making it later, too. And I think it works a lot better in the Donner cut. It's also why when he goes into the chamber, he comes out in that outfit, because they had filmed him emerging in the scene, and in the original cut, he was wearing that. But anyway, so it works to me a lot better. And Lois isn't thrilled about it, like, when it happens, you know? And, like, you kind of see that. Like, she's like, you can tell she's like, you made this decision without me,
right,
you know?
Right, right, right.
And I like that it's emphasized a little bit more in the Donner cut. So, like, all this stuff to me works so much better. And again, the connection to Jor-El, this is what I mean, what you're talking about. You see these moments, the weight of Jor-El in his mind in that time being like, this is not going to be a good idea, kid. I know that there's criminals out there. Like, what if they show up? He doesn't say that, but, like, you can see it, you know, you can feel it. So that's the big difference between these two. And I think it works a lot better in the Donner cut. I think the emotion of Clark, I think Chris Reeve acting in this scene is so good and so great to have that interaction with his dad. I think it works so much better because it's extended.
I think that there's just, like, no real honest build up to it in the theatrical. Maybe it would feel differently, for me. I think I don't feel that level of, like, longing from Clark in the theatrical. Like, what I get from him, and I think Christopher Reeve plays it to the best of his ability, is, like he's kind of, like, overplaying it now. You know what I mean? It's like, she likes me. All right, we're in love. We're getting married. I'm getting rid of all my powers. And Lois, like, I don't know that I feel this way anymore. Sort of like that's sort of the energy that it has in the theatrical. And, like, I hate it.
Question he asked, and I really like it. It's like, when will I do enough? And it's sort of like, that's a valid question. And I like those things, right? Because it is like, is this my life then? Like, when will it be enough?
Do I get to rest? No, you know, like,
right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think those are all interesting things that the Donner Cut delves into and does a better job with. And why I don't mind the giving up the power storyline in this case. Like, because also this was one of the earlier cases of this, right? Like Spider-Man 2 happens because Superman 2 happens.
Of course, absolutely. Does he still go to like the diner in Donner Cut? Because that's the next thing, right? Like, they leave the Fortress of Solitude. And again, like, the entire time I'm watching the Fortress of Solitude stuff, I'm like, is Lex still here? Is he just watching? This is weird. But they go to the diner. Where are... Is that, like, Alaska?
So, this was... Yeah. This is one of those things where nothing is ever explained about this. Yeah. Because it's like, they mention the North Pole several times. But then they show up at a diner and they're driving through country and it looks like Alaska. But the immediate question is like, how'd they get there? And so there's all these questions. And I think what it is like when they first got there to the North Pole, he flew. When they had to get back, they must have taken a boat to like the pole to Alaska.
Right.
And then from Alaska now they were heading back to the States.
Correct.
Which is wild to think about.
Yeah.
But like passage of time makes sense because while this was happening, of course, the other stuff we'll talk about was happening.
Yeah.
But this diner scene does happen. Our best assumption is that it's Alaska, because otherwise, what is this diner in the North Pole that everyone seems to be hanging out in?
So Clark just gets wrecked by, what's his name, Rocky?
Yes.
Idiot, this guy. It's like, this is just a minute steak.
Yeah, that's such a that is such a stupidly amazing line, though. This, like, it's such a dumb
this
line.
Idiot, oh, it's my blood. And you made me bleed my own blood.
Blood. Nobody mixed it yet. It's such a scene. It's in both versions, right? Like, he gets beat up. But I like, again, that it shows that a lot of this is on him. Lois is trying to tell him, like, dude, it's fine. And he's not listening. Which I think is, again, an interesting thing that I wish they delved a little bit more into about the relationship, right? And again, I do like in both version, the moment like the guy like knocks Clark out, you know, beats him up badly, Lois is like, you know what, F this man, just jumps onto his back and like starts wailing on him. I'm like, yeah, Lois Lane.
Yeah.
Like, those are the Lois moments I like. And you get, again, in the Donner Cut, you get a lot more of that like spunky Lois than I think you get of the like more like, oh, but Superman, like, pining Lois.
Sure.
So this scene is almost pretty much identical. And of course, though, Superman gets beat up. He's just like, ooh, did I make a mistake? And then once I turn on the TV, he's just like, oh, I definitely made a mistake. Because the TV is where they reveal what's been going on with Zod, Ursa, Non. You know, to cut jump backwards, what we do get in both versions is the military attack. And I do love that scene,
too.
That's
very good.
Like, it's so great. You just, like... Like, Non just straight up catching the rocket and then just, like, breaking it. You have them blowing the helicopter, you know. Oh, blow them a kiss, my dear.
Yeah.
You know, into the barn. You have, again, I don't know why I like it. It's just so simple. But when they're shooting the missiles at them and the three of them are just standing there and, like, the missile hits them and they're just still standing there. And it's almost like they just look at each other like, like, it's like nothing. And I really, really love that. I think it's such an awesome, like, display of their powers and just a fun display of their powers without being goofy or silly, if that makes sense.
Sure, it does. Of course. But they go from there to, like, bring me to the president, like, take me to your leader stuff.
That's how they find out they're not on the planet Houston, they're on the planet Earth, where the reporter's like, what?
Houston.
No, idiot.
Yeah. Houston. And
the planet Houston. And they head to the White House, right? And here's a small change, but again, one I like. In the theatrical, for some reason, they were in Texas, and then they passed by Mount Rushmore, and they defaced Mount Rushmore to look like them.
Yes.
And it's just like,
but
huh?
Like, just like, screw you, Lincoln.
Yeah. Right. With just like their laser vision. And it's just like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Whereas in the Donner Cut, they go to Washington, D.C., and they knock over the Washington Monument because... Yeah, why would they pass by Mount Rushmore from Texas to D.C.?
But also, like, why would they take the time to, like, go there and then inscribe, like, how do they know to go there? And, a lot of questions. Also, just because they are superpowered doesn't make them automatically incredibly
sculptors.
Talented sculptors.
Correct.
And yet they are able to just, like, laser off all of the presidents from Mount Rushmore and then render their own likenesses brilliantly within nanoseconds.
and then knock over Lincoln. Yeah, it's a very like silly moment.
Screw you, Abe. Yeah.
But then we have the White House scene, and while the scenes are similar, once again, I think there are different shots in the Donner cut that shows them and a little bit extended and shows them like wrecking shop a lot more. Like it shows like the White House like desperately trying to like stop these people, and it's just like, nope. I love that Ursa just yeets a man out the roof. Mm-hmm. Like, just grabs him, like whoop.
Yeah.
And you just see her like smacking guys around, like, you know, ripping something off and like messing up with them. There's a great scene where Zod, I don't think this is in the Lester version, but after like, as Ursa and Nan are like smashing through stuff, right? Unstoppable, basically. Zod is basically like arms crossed, leaning against the wall, like watching it happen. And it's just such an like fantastic moment of like the general just like, yeah, I don't have to do much. And the guy comes through the window and he grabs a guy and throws him through the window. I don't think they have this in the Lester cut, but in the Donner cut, Zod, after throwing the guy, is holding the gun, and he like kind of like looks at it and then like grabs it and like points it and starts shooting like wildly, and you just see this smile on his face as he's doing it. That I'm like, this is incredible. This is an incredible moment of just like, look at this. Look at this thing these humans created. What a bunch of maniacs.
Yeah.
Coming from General Zod, which I really like.
Yeah.
So the White House scene is a lot more action-packed in the Donner cut. And while the Lila's not super different, I just think, again, it works better. The action is shot so much better. The scenes are so much more interesting. And that's where they go confront the president. And immediately Zod is like, you're not the president. No one who leads so many would kneel so fast. And this scene has a number of Zod lines I like. One being, I'm the president and I will kneel if it will save lives. It will. Starting with yours.
Starting with like, yours. Yeah.
Great one. And then there's one man who will not kneel before you. Who is this imbecile?
Yeah, like, that's very good. But I also liked, you're not the president. You wouldn't, if you were, you wouldn't kneel before me so quickly. I'm like, ah! I watched that. I was like, ah!
Well, this is why you're not the president, Josh.
I was just trying to like kind of extrapolate the moment and like think about like, ah!
Yeah. You've done a lot. You just wrecked shop across the entire U.S., basically.
I think there may be, like, I don't know, one or two or one who would just, like, immediately just drop down. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Just food for thought.
It is, right? And so that's essentially where it leads us to the diner. This is where the Earth has surrendered, basically, to Zod and Ursa and Nan. And Clark is just like, wait, what? Here?
Yeah,
how?
Correct.
When?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I have so many questions.
Yes, yes. So Clark is then, he's going to go, he's like, I have to go back.
Yes.
And so he does, and we don't really, do we really see exactly, well, he goes back and he sees that the crystal is there.
Yes.
Yes. And so the crystal, like the green crystal that's not kryptonite, but is the crystallized mint jelly rock candy that he's going to use to regain his powers. That's in the theatrical. Is there any additional bell or whistle?
A ton.
Oh,
because in this, right? Like he finds his green crystal,
and then like
he picks it up.
It's
and
like
he's
this
just
whole.
Like,
but that's another reason why I hated it, Kevin. It's like all of this was for nothing. All of it was for nothing. It was for like one scene, even. Like there was really no and I guess it's to like set up that he's going to be able to use this to depower Zod and Nan and Ursa, and so like, how is he going to defuse that by taking their powers away? So I guess you have to introduce a mechanism with which you could take Kryptonian powers away. All right. But it's a long way to go, and not the Star Wars podcast to get to there in the theatrical to just have like the one scene where he just gets his crap rocked in the diner, like just for this was like, I hated it.
So in the Donner cut, he goes back to the fortress and he's like, basically when he shows up, it's again, a little bit different in dialogue, which I think, again, the dialogue's better, of just like, dad, I messed up, because again, in this version, it's his dad he's talking to. He's like, I messed up. You were right. These Kryptonian criminals are free. I can't do anything. I don't know what to do. I'm sorry. I screwed up. You were right. And to silence. And then he sees the glowing crystal. And so he picks it up and he puts it into the thing, and Jor-El shows up and is just like, basically he's just like, well, I did tell you, didn't I? And he's just like, yeah, I know, I'm sorry I messed up. I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed. Like, there's actually a conversation he has with Jor-El about, like, what happened and how he did screw up. And Jor-El is basically just like, listen, here's the deal. Like, I figured something like this would happen. I can, like, we can give you your powers back. But basically, it's going to take the energy in these archives, in the Kryptonian archives. Like, all of the energy is going to be used to give you your powers back, meaning all of Krypton's history and myself, this interface, is wiped from existence. You can't talk to us anymore. We're gone.
That's the trade-off.
That's the trade-off.
Huge trade. It's like, you won't be able to see your parents anymore.
Right. Like, all the stuff that, like, the history of Krypton is gone now, and it'll live in you, but, like, we're gone. You won't be able to talk to us anymore. Like, all of it is going to go away. And so he does it because he knows he has to. And, like, there's a weird scene about the father becoming the son and all this other weird shit that I was just like, I don't like that part as much. But and that's how, like, Jor-El comes, like, you know, he doesn't solidify, but his, like, hologram walks forward and, like, puts his hand on his shoulders and, like, clearly, like, Superman starts shaking or whatever. And it's the idea of, like, the power of the Kryptonian archives are going back to him. And so that's the trade-off he makes. And I do, again, think it's better because, one, we see something happening versus he picks up the crystal and next thing we know. So I think that does work a lot better. It's a choice. It's a trade-off. The hero has to make a decision and he faces consequences. That's how these things should go, you know? So, and I think Donner
that
works better.
That works a lot better. That works a lot better because there's no trade. There's nothing. Right. It's just, he just walks it back. It happened just for, like, honestly, I don't know why, other than, like, to set up how he'll take out the bad guys at the end.
Right. And I like that it is, like, it's both. It serves two purposes in the Donner Cut, which I like a lot, because it's always now, like, the option two is there, where it's basically just like, this is a one-time deal, kid. Like, if you ever use this chamber again, you're screwed. So just remember that, because, like, the chamber's there. You can use it to become human. But literally, this is it.
Yeah.
Like, we're done now. We're done, though. Like, if you're human, you're human forever. So I like that, again, in the Donner Cut, I think they do a lot better version of this. And this is where now we have, while that's happening, Ursa, Nan, and Zod are just chilling in the White House, bored as hell because they've conquered the planet.
Lex shows up waving the white flag.
Yes.
He's obsessed with beachfront property.
Yeah.
So he wants to give them Superman with very meager demands in exchange. Australia! Like, doing the full Nixon is so funny.
I love it, and I love his delivery. There's just a funness to this Lex that I think works, because he's still very smart, but, like, just the little things where he's just like, he reveals, like, oh, the son of Jor-El, this is the one you call Superman. Like, I love his, like, interactions with Ursa, where she crushes his hand. He's just like, oh, Jesus. And I love the, like, does he fly? Constantly. But, you know, is he strong? Oh, very. And it's just like, but where he is one, you are but three. Four if you count
four
him twice.
Four if you count him twice.
Like, all that stuff I really like. I think this is, like, a Lex who's just like, I'm going to take advantage of this situation. And I like that. And again, the Donner could explain how he got there, right? Tracking the alpha waves.
Yeah.
And so then he brings them to the Daily Planet, where they just smash the hell out of the place.
Poor Perry White just gets wrecked.
Wrecked. I do love the scene where Perry just throws the thing at Nan, just like, blunk. And it's just like, yes.
But anyway, plunks him up into the ceiling.
Yep.
Poor guy. Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah, and this is where you have the setup to the big moment, right? The climax of the film, which I'm very excited to get into. Like, they show up, they're like, Lex, what the hell, man? You know, and Lex is just like, what do you mean, kill me? Oh, there is actually a really, really funny moment that they cut from the Lester version that is in the Donner that I really like. So they show up to Daily Planet, like, they knock out Perry White, and they go, this is the son of Jor-El, and they lift up Jimmy Olsen. And it's incredible.
That's really great.
And Lex is like, what? No.
Yeah.
Like, it's just such a goofy moment, but at the same time, like, yeah, of course, why would they know what he looks like? But then, of course, Superman shows up. Another change that I do think I like in the Lester version is when Superman shows up, there's an amazing line, like, he's flying outside the window and he does that, like, general care to step outside, which I do really like, obviously, to play on the fact that they're flying. Whereas in the Donner Cut, he says, haven't you ever heard of the freedom of press? Which I'm like, no, they're from another planet. Why would they know that?
Yeah.
So I don't like that line as much. And this is where we get the fight. And I'm there are differences here in that the goofier parts are cut out, like the toupee scene, the guy on the roller skates is like trimmed down. But I'm curious your take on this fight. In this movie.
It's fine. I think it's all right. I mean, I like the exploitation of Superman's another one of Superman's weaknesses. I mean, I think that these movies clearly understand how to make Superman a strong, dramatic character, even in a fight when he's up against, you know, even if he were up against Lex, like they did this last time. It's so easy to just say that he's like invulnerable to stuff. You're really uncreative if you think Superman is invulnerable, because like all you have to do is threaten a bus full of people, even a bus with one person on it. And now you're drawing Superman's fire effectively. So I like the ways that they play with that here. I think maybe there are some inconsistencies when he like throws him through the Coca-Cola sign and like there's Coca-Cola wreckage probably falling to the ground. But like if I could just like shut that off, then it's totally fine. But I like that idea of like he like the battle is less to quote your turn of phrase, punchy, kicky, flippy, and more like Superman is like constantly being tasked with putting out these fires that the Kryptonians are setting for him.
Yeah, and so okay, obviously the effects are, you know, a little older, but for me the themes and what they do with this fight I love way more than like what we saw in Man of Steel.
Sure, yeah.
Because for me there's several things. One, I think there's a lot being done with like them chasing each other through speed and not working, right? And again, this is mostly the same between the two versions. There are some like shots that are different that, again, I do think it works better in the Donner version because I think they focus in on like smaller little details about how they're fighting, about the dialogues. But what we're seeing here is like as they're punching each other, Superman very quickly is just like Jesus. Like he goes and has to say like grab the falling, you know, top of the Empire State Building, like put not, you know, uses it to trap Nan. He's trying to constantly save people as this battle is going. Whereas in Man of Steel, of course, the battle is also so like hectic and hard to follow. Whereas I think the beats are very straightforward. There's less of like in Man of Steel where it's just like punching, 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 as you said. In this, it's like way more creative. They're throwing stuff at him.
I will note, Kevin, that there is a moment in Superman 2 where Superman very nearly snaps Zod's neck. If you want to say that Zack Snyder was pulling that out of nowhere, Superman absolutely put Zod in this chokehold at one point in Superman 2 where you're like, oh, well, what's he going to do now?
Well, there's a chokehold and a neck snap.
Yeah, I'm mostly making a joke, but it's there. Yeah. It's there. Yeah,
when they're on top of the car.
Yeah, he's got him in the Fortress of Solitude. He's got him by the throat. It's like, what are you going to do, Superman? We've seen this before in the future.
That's actually very funny because in the Donner cut, that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So we'll get to there. I like, but the also the little things,
Richard
right?
Richard like, Lester two things, is a time traveling Zack Snyder, confirmed.
This explains a lot. but there's two things I really like. So I like where Nan just like smashes him underground and you don't see them fighting for obvious reasons.
I love that.
I love that you just see the effects.
Yes.
Like that is awesome.
It's great.
Because like it shows like, oh man, the power. And then you just see Nan fly out and like go through like the building. And I think that the building doesn't collapse. And I like that part of it. You see, like, I liked when Ursa like literally just kicks the thing to like catch the sewer cover and like throws it at him. Like that's an ingenious usage of the powers versus just again, flying punchy, flying window, smash, you know, building, fall. I love that. I love that Superman, like you said, it has to be creative in his use. When Zod is using his heat vision, he grabs a mirror, it flips it and like uses it to like reflect back on him. Smart move. He's using his ice breath, but it's a struggle. And you see that. You also see him saving people. Even the line, don't do it the people. Why was that not in Man? Like just have those moments. This is such a great Superman fight because it's him not just fighting three people stronger or three people with his powers and he's outnumbered, but he's also struggling to keep up to help people and save them.
Yeah.
And I love
it's
that.
It's a real test of his limits.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's so well done. I think that's great. And you see, you know, the Daily Planet staff watching what's happening. And I think it works really well. And I love also they also do the Spider-Man scene here where it's just like, they killed Superman, let's get him. Yeah. And it's just like, this goes about as well as you thought it would. Yeah. And like Zod and Ursa Nunn, just not even, just like, you're not even worth
these metropolites. You mess with one metropolite, you mess, like, with,
you
all,
mess
of
with
us.
All of us. And like, you just see them literally just like, you're barely worth our breath, basically. Like, they could have murdered all of them easily, and they were just like, please. And just like, creates essentially like a hurricane in the streets of Metropolis. And I love that. In the Lester version, there's all these goofy scenes, the phone booth falling over. That's all cut, because it's a serious moment of just like, look at the destruction these three are causing right now. It is wild. And so all of that I really like. I actually really love this fight scene. I love the little details. I love that it's creative. I love the various things that happen. And then when Superman does come out, he's just like, this is bad. And so he flies off because he's trying to lure them away. Correct. Very clearly. And again, because he needs to get them out of the city and help the people. And I love that. Once again, showing Superman. And when they, again, another difference, when they show up in... Oh, you also have a little more Lex Luthor in the fight. Like, he's, like, literally in the Daily Planet lying on top of a cabinet, like kind of, like, sitting back on top. And, like, Jimmy comes in and is just, like, with coffee. And, it, like, Lex grabs it. And Jimmy's like, that's for the chief. And he's like, chief's right here, kid. And just, like, drinks the coffee.
That's great.
But, like, there's a lot of, like, fun Lex Lutherisms. And so they come back into the Daily Planet. And they're like, we did it. He fleed. And, of course, there's a conversation where Lex is like, fleed? What the hell, man? And what I like, though, in this, it's... In the Lester version, it's just like, he fleed. It's like, you promised to kill him. Okay, fine, we will. Whereas in this, Lois and Jimmy and Perry are just like, Superman fleeing? I don't think so. There's clearly more here. And Lois basically just being just like, you didn't defeat him. If he's still alive, he's never going to stop. He will come back and try again and again and again.
So she, like, basically, she tricks them into being like, you got to pursue him.
Yeah, and I like that, right? Like, emphasizing the point that, like, no, like, he's... No, like, you know? And so that, of course, compels them to be like, fine. And that's just like, well, kill these people. And Lex is like, I know where he lives, though. And so that's where you go to the fortress. Now, I want to hear you talk about the fortress
scene. Yeah, because there's, like, some trippy-ass shit. It's very... what is going on? Because then there's all the duplicates, and then they disappear, and then the holograms. There's a 400 Supermen, and then, like... And then the Kryptonians, they also do this thing, like, where they, like, mirror reflect, and then they, like, they're, like, here, and then it's, like... Fring! Fring, fring, fring. And like, it's a kind of like, the sound design is very alien. The whole thing, I feel like now, like, did I ingest something, but like, before I watched this that I wasn't aware of? Like, what am I seeing? I was so confused because there's just like the constant teleportation of all of these different characters with, I don't think, any explanation for it at all.
None. So, I feel like what's going to work here, too, is, like, we're just going to run through the Lester version before we'll just back up to do the Donner.
Yeah, so, very quickly, they get there, Superman's there, then the three Kryptonians, like, do this thing where they teleport to Superman's location, yeah. And then he teleports away, and then four Supermen appear, one by Nan, one by Ursa. This is after Lex, is this before or after Lex? This is before. Okay. So
this is before.
Yeah. 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 So there's four of them. The real one is by Zod, even though, Zod thinks that he's a fake. And then Superman is about to crack Zod's neck. I'm telling you, he's going to kill him. And everyone's like, don't do it. We'll kill Lois. And he's like, oh, fine. And then he goes to Lex Luthor, and Lex is like, I hate these guys. They keep telling me they're going to kill me. At least with you, I knew where I stood. He's like, all right, cool. This is Superman. Superman's like, okay, cool. Well, then help me get them into this chamber, because if we get them into the chamber, we can zap them with their powers. And Lex's like, put him in the chamber. You'll get rid of his powers. And Superman's like, what the hell, bro? And so they put him in, but Superman has finally learned how to lie, and so he's lied to Lex Luthor. He's fighting fire with fire. He goes in the thing. He's the only one immune from the power. Everybody else gets blasted with this Kryptonian power robbing doohickey, and Superman kneels before Zod and grabs his hand and breaks it. And
I love that moment, though, right? Because like, he does it, and then the score kicks in.
Yeah,
I just love it. The score kicks in. He's just like, ah! And he just grabs him and lifts him up into the air.
It's so great. And so, like,
non-drops and Zod is gone, and then you're a pain in the neck, and I visualize Pickles as Lois Lane drops Ursa. And so they all fall into the crevasses of the Fortress of Solitude. They're without their powers. So Kevin, just presumably they just like fall to their deaths and just like shatter at the base of the Fortress of Solitude.
So this is one of those things. I mean,
that's just sort of like what I'm visualizing. They just like fall a great height and they just are obliterated.
That's what everyone goes with, right? Like they just died, right? And I don't know why this isn't in the Donner cut, and it's not in the Lester version even, but there is a version that was shown on TV that does have a scene. I don't know why they didn't include this in any of them moving forward, that actually shows Zod, Ursa, and Non, now powerless, being arrested and taken away by the police at the end of the movie.
Okay.
Because they have no more powers.
Yeah.
So the confirmation that they're like, they're not dead. Which I do think, like, having a confirmation is like, they're not dead, because, like, otherwise,
I prefer
them.
My version where they're just
they're
like,
dead.
They're just like battered, like mushy bone and sinew at the bottom of the Fortress of Solitude.
Gross.
Yeah. I mean, like, what else? Like, they get arrested? It's sort of weird, but okay. I guess
they go to jail. They committed war crimes.
Live to fight another day. Yeah.
But, like, so
that's the theatrical version of the climax of the movie.
Yeah, and I'll probably even run through a little bit more here, because, like, there's stuff here. It's not just, like, do they do the weird thing with the teleporting and the multiple Superman, but there's also a weird scene where they're all, like, point at Superman, their fingers, and, like weird, like, white laser energy shoots out, and he, like, has to get it and reflect it back. But the one that you skip that everyone calls out because it's freaking bananas is he peels his S off and throws it
at
Non.
Oh, yeah, and he, like, throws, like a fruit roll-up onto Non.
Yeah, and then it's only for, like, half a second where it wraps Non, then disappears, and it's just like, what was that?
Is there any sort of precedent for that?
No!
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's precedent to none of this. All of this stuff happening, right, are weird non-Kryptonian stuff that we've seen. There's even a line he says where he's just like, when he did the multiple versions of himself, he's like, we used to play this game as kids. And I'm like, with who and where? Like, you grew up on Earth, remember? Like, you were a baby on Krypton. You never did this. So, like, all of that was just super weird and did not make any sort of sense. And was, like, weird. What are these Kryptonian powers? These never existed. So I really didn't like it. The cellophane stuff especially is just like, what is this nonsense that's happening here? You could have even, like, in the comics, he has Superman robots, but of course they never introduced that stuff here, so, like, the duplicates can't beat that. It's a weird, messy scene, but it plays out as you're saying, right? Where he uses Lex, he tricks him, and even just to, like, flash through the end, because there's a lot of details that do change after this, so we might as well go to it. They essentially cut away from the fortress after they're defeated, after he uses Lex to help him, basically, and is just like, no, Luther, you're also going back to jail.
Right.
And then they cut to, like, there's nothing beyond that besides cutting essentially to the Daily Planet, right?
No.
They're back at the Daily
Planet. No, I mean, so he goes to the Daily Planet and he wipes Lois's memories.
Right. But the Daily Planet scene, there's going to be a severe contrast into, like, okay, what they do in Donner Cut. But, like, this, what happens to Superkiss, right, is essentially, like, Lois just being like, oh, no, you're Superman, and I'm so worried all the time, and I really don't like
it. I hate it, too. I think it's terrible, and, like, the way it's presented in the movies, he's just, like, making the call to, like, you don't get to remember any of this without, like, any kind of conversation. But then the other thing is, like, the movie just ends also with him just going back to the diner and kicking the shit out of Rocky.
And
he junks up the diner and gives them, like, a fat stack of cash to clean up the mess. And, like,
I do like that he paid for the damage.
Yeah, it's, but, like,
I actually like that scene
but
a little
like,
bit.
Superman shouldn't have had to, like, he should have had to do all of that. That felt like very petty. It felt like very petty.
There's been a lot of conversations about this.
Feels
scene,
like
right?
He's and, like he's like taking it like he's going back to it's vengeance more so than justice, because if it were justice, he would take him outside and and get him, you know, either arrested or whatever in a way that doesn't do damage to this establishment, that even with a fat stack of cash, now that fat stack of cash has to go towards fixing this inconvenience that Superman has left them with, rather than just giving them a fat stack of cash for being great and making good food and being good people.
I mean, like, yes, but this is the parts that I still enjoy, and I think that, like, it's a little bit petty for sure, but I always feel like it's one of those things I point to. It's just like, right, but remember that the Superman we see when he's in that costume isn't always who he is. Clark Kent, the kid from Smallville, right? He had a bit of this in him, and I'm okay with that, right? I like that he didn't beat the guy up. He basically stood there, the guy tried to punch him, and, like, just broke his hand, basically, because he tried to punch Superman. And then he just, like, sits him on top of the counter and, like, shoves him, and, like, he does smash the pinball machine, but he doesn't do severe damage to the place, and he pays for the damages that happened previously.
He breaks a lot of silverware and plates, and he breaks the pinball machine. That's not going to be easy to fix. Someone's going to have to clean up the mess.
For some weird reason, Superman also showed up later and took care of all this.
That would be fine. That would be better. You know, Superman shows up and he fixes the place. Like, fine, then I'm good. But, like, he's just leaving them, like, with all of this junk. It's kind of a shitty thing to do. The movie doesn't break for me. And let me be clear, even the Lester cut, I really loved watching this. I do want to make that clear because I know we're doing, like, a lot of, like, pick apart, but I think, like, it's useful. But, like, I loved the movie. Like, both of these movies, you know, the first one and the second one, I really enjoyed them both. And it's just been tremendous to go back and check this stuff out. There's just, like, a few nits to pick. And this one being, like, the final, like, tonal note of the movie for me was like, what an asshole. Like, I'm it's not necessarily mad about it, but, like, what a dick.
It's funny that you hit on that, because it is a contentious point amongst many, many people. Yeah. And, like, I do think they could have probably done it better. But we'll get to that. So that's essentially because, like, the Donner cut version, also we need to talk about.
He flies off around the planet. It's how he always does it.
So let's back up for a moment. Here's where the Donner cut differs. One, that entire weird-ass fight in the Fortress of Solitude does not happen. We don't get to see these weird powers. And I actually like that because, one, those weird powers are goddamn weird.
They're so strange.
And two, I like that because Superman did fight them. And he realized, like, I'm not going to be able to beat these guys. And the only way to beat them is to outsmart them. So when they show up, his intent was already there. He knew what he had to do. And, like, you actually see him when he emerges, he's emerging from around where the crystal, where that little chamber is, because that was his plan to begin with. And Zod basically says, like, when they show up, he's just like, yo, we fought, you lost. Like, there's no point in us fighting again. And Superman's just kind of like, you know, I won't stop if I, you know, I'm not going to surrender to you. And he's just like, listen, if you don't, we're just going to tear apart every human on this planet, starting with this one, as he points to Lois, you know. And Lois is like, yeah, like pull her like a chicken wing or whatever. And it's this idea of Superman's like, no, don't do that. And it's just like, I'll let you live, Superman, because I don't want to kill you. I want you to, you know, serve, be in servitude to me.
Like, do what Jor-El should have done.
Correct. He's like, that's what I want from you. So if you want to save these people, all you have to do is kneel and swear servitude. And Superman's, and then, like, that's the part two. It's just, it's literally a conversation, and everything Zod's saying is making sense in context of what he's setting up. Like, we fought, there's no reason we should be doing this. I like that. I like that it's a dialogue versus the fight that we saw. And then that's where you have the Lex moment.
Yeah, I needed that from Zod.
Yes,
I didn't get any of that in the theatrical, and so, like, Terrence Stamp is great, and, like, the physicality of the Kryptonians is great, but I really did feel like I missed anything that was really deeply connecting them emotionally back to where they were at the start of the original Superman movie. This sounds like this addresses that.
It does. And this is where you have them also be like, great, kill this one, then we don't need him. And Lex is like, come on. And that's where you have the moment where Superman does the thing, but Lex be like, get him in this chamber. And then Lex is like, don't go in there. And Superman does, like, you snake or whatever. And he's just like, okay, you know, you go in there. And Superman, like, in the theatrical, he's just like, okay. And he does it. In the Donner cut, once again, he's just like, no, I'm not going to do that. And it's like, fine, kill Lois. And he actually, like, lunges at them, and you have, like, non-grab him. So you actually have Superman struggling to really sell the idea that going in that chamber is bad, which I like because it also emphasizes, like, the trickery of it, right? Like, emphasizes the small details of really fooling these three into, like, oh, he definitely doesn't want to go in there. It must be bad. You know what I mean? Like, really selling the lie. That the rest of it then plays out very similar, where he goes in, there's a scene where he crushes Zod's hand, like, all that happens. And then they have the exchange with Lex, which is like, oh, you smart little man, you know, you used me, you know. And he's like, yeah, I knew you'd betray me. And again, I love that Superman wins by outsmarting. I think that's great. I think that's fantastic. And then the biggest, biggest difference. So after that fight's over, Superman and Lois exit the fortress and they have a conversation as Superman and Lois. And they talk about, like, look, you know, like Superman's like, I don't think this is going to work as a relationship because I got to be Superman and the danger. And Lois is like, look, I don't really agree with that, but okay. And the entire time, Lois is like being her jokey self. Like, she's cracking jokes, but crying. And I love that we're seeing, again, the character of Lois Lane, who she's supposed to be, where it's like she is a strong-willed person. And she's just like, okay, if that's what you want, fine. I'm going to make these jokes, but clearly I'm broken apart on the inside of all this. And you see him fly her back home. He drops her off on the balcony where they first had their night together, like that, like in the first movie, to call back to that. They have, you know, the conversation, and he's just like, I'll see you at work still, at least. And she's just like, sure. And she's clearly like a mess, but again, keeping that strong face. And I love it. I love it because that's Lois Lane. And the best part, so he flies up and he leaves. And even though Lois Lane is heartbroken, upset, and has gone through like some severe trauma, she sits down at her typewriter and starts writing a story about Superman saving the world, because she's still a reporter, and she's even in this state, she's like, I'm gonna do my job. And I'm like, this is Lois Lane, like, after all, like, versus what we get in the Lester cut, which is going to the Daily Planet immediately, and she's just like, I stayed up all night crying because, like, you were gone, and what am I to do? Like, I was just like, oh my god, like, it's just such a different look for the character, you know?
So she doesn't get her mind wiped.
So, no. So what happens is that she sits down to write the story, and you see, like, Perry White go pour the toothpaste. And this is the point. And again, I don't love it here either, but this is the point where he does the time reversal.
Yeah.
This is the point where he's just like, I have to fix this. And it's not to fix Lois. It's to fix everything. I screwed up real bad, and I need to fix this mistake. And so what happens is he reverses time. And to create a situation now where no one remembers anything that happened, the Earth gets back to normal at least, but he still remembers all the consequences and terrible things that happened because of his own selfish decisions. And I think that's at least something good, you know? So the reversal time for me still doesn't work. Personally, again, I would prefer it if Lois and Clark both remembered. You also do get another scene where after he reverses time, Lois and Clark are back, like, he's back at the Daily Planet, and they do a banter moment. And it's the bantering we saw from, like, the beginning of this, of the Donner cut, where they're friendly, they're jokey, and she's just like, oh, Clark, I thought I remembered something, but I don't know, it's gone. She's like, hey, do you mind getting us some pizza? And he's like, sure, and she's like, I'll chip in and help you pay for it. And he's like, okay, and he starts to walk away, and he's like, Lois. And then she's like, yeah. And he's like, never mind, I'll pay for the whole pizza, don't worry about it. And as he's walking away, she goes, thanks, Clark, you're super. And, like, it's just, like, these fun little moments with them that I'm just like, this is so much better than, like, where we ended up in the Lester cut. And so, yeah, you then see the diner scene does happen, pretty much shot for shot. What's weird about this, by the way, though, what makes it worse is that in this version,
the guy never did anything. Yeah.
Right. So that is very, very complicated in Donner cut, but that's how it wraps, and they do the fly off into the space and everything, and that's where this movie ends. But, like, especially the scenes, like, there's just, they do Lois so much better in the Donner cut than they do in the Lester cut. I think she's much stronger of a character. I love the detail of her sitting down, heartbroken, but still writing the story, like, because that's who Lois Lane is. I love the banter we get with them at the Daily Planet afterwards versus, like, the, you know, emotionally wrought, upset Lois and Superman kisses, mind wipes her. Like, there's just so much better in terms of what they do with character and story in the Donner version, in my opinion, than the Lester cut. And don't get me wrong, like, as Josh said, listen, I love both versions of these movies.
Yeah.
Like, I love these movies. It's just crazy how much better, in my opinion, the Donner cut is compared to the Lester cut.
So how much better are both of these cuts than what we are getting into next week? Superman 3 coming up, which is of the four Christopher Reeve Superman movies, is by far and away the one that I have the least recall on.
I'm so glad you said that. Here's my
it's
hot
take. It's not even close.
I think you're going to love it.
Okay, great.
That's my hot take. I think you're going to love it. I'm really, really excited to get into that one. It's we're about to get into a different movie because, like, we talked about the little things about the Lester version, right? Because the Salkins were now in charge, that it's more sillier and they have more goofy moments. With Donner completely gone, with them starting from scratch with no previously used footage, imagine how this movie's going to go. These people who wanted this stuff to be silly and goofy, you can probably figure out where we're going to be getting in this next one.
I can't wait. I'm so excited. We talked about how, like, there's like a thing. I remember the thing, but I don't remember the context for the thing at all. I just know the GIF, basically. So, like, why does that happen? What does that mean? I'm pretty pumped. I'm pretty hyped to get into Superman 3 because I've maybe not seen it. It's possible. It's possible that, like, I've only, like, seen, like,
you've only seen GIFs and clips.
It's possible that I've only seen bits and pieces of it on, like, WB11 on Long Island when I was a kid, and, like, didn't sit down and watch the whole thing. Definitely sat down and watched all of the first one and the second one, and definitely The Quest for Peace. But I don't know that I've seen 3 top to bottom. So that's going to be utterly incredible. That's coming your way next week on Everything is Superman as we're continuing this adventure. I'll say for me, Superman 1, then Superman 2. That's how I'm ranking them. I don't think that it would have, I would have expected it to be that way, but having watched this one, I just think that the first one's a little more pure for me, and there's really only the one thing that I have a huge problem with in this one. There's a few things, and it sounds like there's a better version that I haven't seen. It might be different if I had watched Donner this week instead of Lester.
Yeah, for me, it's weird to end up in that spot, but I do think on this watch, like, one, I do think I like one more than two, which is I would not have expected at all. But definitely, for the Donner cut, the Donner cut's the best one of the three, I think, by far and away. But I do, again, want to emphasize, like, it's so much fun talking about these movies. The Superman 2 had such a lasting impact. We talked about the stuff from the first one, that, like, the fortress and how all of that looks. I mean, you got so much in here, especially with Zod, Ursa, and Non, like, as quintessential Superman villains, and it's entirely because of this film.
And they're great, like, no mistake. They're so very great,
so good. And even like I said, I love Lex in this one. I like him possibly a little bit more than the first one, because I think he works so well, and his exchanges with Reeve and his exchanges with Terrence Stamp are so good. Gene Hackman does such a great job, and the horrifying, scary nature of those villains are so great. And in the Donner cut especially, like, there's so much great Superman and Lois stuff. Like, Lois as a character is done so well in the Donner cut, possibly better than any version I've seen of her, because of the little details, the banter between them, her like attitude about certain things. Again, the like ending stuff I think works so much better, moving her away from like this sort of like heavily Silver Age version of the character, which was more like always wanting to be Superman's girlfriend, a little more, you know, like that's the only thing she cares about, versus the real version that tracks from the first movie back to this one and the original Golden Age and now modern day interpretation of it. Like, this is so great for them. And that scene, again, that scene in Niagara Falls is such the defining thing about those two characters, Superman and Lois, I think is in that scene in the Donner cut. So I really love these movies. I adore them, obviously. They have impacted me greatly. And it was so awesome talking about Superman 2, especially, and getting an interesting perspective from it. So, I'm curious what other people will think of it, especially afterwards. And I'm curious to hear their takes on these two versions. But if you have the opportunity, I highly, highly recommend watching the Donner Cut.
All right. So check out the Donner Cut if you can. Hit us up with some feedback. We're not getting any feedback today, but we'll have room to do it next week for Superman 3 for sure. So we'll want your Superman 3 feedback, but we might want your feedback for either of the two Superman 2s as well. Super@PostShowRecaps.com. That's super@postshowrecaps.com. You can also hit us up, Josh@postshowrecaps.com, Kevin@postshowrecaps.com. You can hit us up on Twitter @RoundHoward. That's me @KevMahadeo. That's Kevin @postshowrecaps. That's Post Show Recaps. You can also talk to us in the Post Show Recaps patron Discord if you are a patron at the Discord level. We certainly appreciate everybody who is able to join us there. Patreon.com/postshowrecaps. Both Kevin and I are severely available. Should you choose to sign up at that $10 a month level to join us in the Discord. You can hang out with Kevin and I. We'll talk to you about Superman until we're both blue in the face with the red trim and the yellow insignia right in the middle of the face, as well as if Superman tore it off his chest and threw it on top of us. Exactly. If you're able to sign up at that $5 level as well, you'll get bonus podcasts in the post-show recaps patron feed, including those Mighty Ducks podcasts that Kevin is currently doing with Melissa Woodward. So much more. If you need more Kevin than that, you can go to themahadman.com.
Mm-hmm.
Check out all of Kevin's rantings and ravings over there. Until then, next week, Superman 3, a movie Kevin thinks that I'm really going to like. I don't know what that says about me. Is it okay?
It'll say a lot.
Okay, great. Cool. Wonderful. All right. I'm looking forward to Superman 3. We'll be back next week with that podcast. Until then, everybody, up, up, and away!
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.